Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Our Dharma talks about love and peace and compassion and kindness and generosity. But Bhagwan Krishna plays a very key role in the war of the Mahabharata. Bhagwan Ram fought and won a war. How do we reconcile those? So, love, compassion, caring, these are virtues. This is Dharma. Nonviolence, this is Dharma. And then we have these stories from the epics, from the scriptures of great wars. How do we reconcile it? Well, the only way to reconcile it is to understand it in a much broader context. It's to understand it in a context in which we're choosing righteousness over unrighteousness, choosing dharma over adharma. It's a best case of a bad case scenario choice. Let me give you an example closer to home. Antibiotics kill bacteria. If you've got a bacterial infection, you've got pneumonia in your lungs. Well, what is pneumonia? It's a type of bacteria. And it's growing and growing and growing and growing in your lungs. They multiply and divide like crazy. Soon you can't breathe. Then you're on a ventilator. So even those of us who are hardcore naturalists, there comes a time where you say, okay, fine. My life is at stake. Very few people are such hardcore naturalists or such hardcore non-violent people that they would refuse to take an antibiotic to kill pneumonia and instead would let the pneumonia kill themselves. Most of us understand that my life is of more value. And yeah, we're making a value judgment. But it's a judgment that most of us share, that my life is of more value than the lives of the bacteria. They're also alive. But my life is of more value than theirs, so I'm going to take an antibiotic and kill them so that I can live. Even those of us who are very, very, very strict vegetarians, one of the things that comes up so frequently is, usually young kids will say to me, well, so if you were stranded in the jungle, you were lost in the forest, you had nothing to eat, there were no berries anywhere, you were going to die of starvation, would you eat an animal then? And I always say, yeah, I hope I could. I mean, I obviously hope I'm never in that situation. I couldn't guarantee that I could actually muster what it takes to kill an animal and eat it, but I would hope that I could. And I certainly would have no moral problem with it. Because even though I am a very staunch, very hardcore vegetarian, I also am able to make a value judgment that says, in my view, My life is of more value than the life of the squirrel or the chipmunk or whatever it would be that I would find and kill to survive until I was rescued. But that is only the case if I am going to commit my life to good work. That's not an absolute truth. I do not believe that in an absolute sense, a human life is of more value than an animal life. But if we are committing ourselves to Dharma, to good work, then yeah, I could morally justify killing a small animal to save me so that I could be rescued and go out and do good work. And this brings us to the issues of the Mahabharat war, the war of the Ramayana. Nobody wanted to kill Duryodhana and his army. They did everything they could to prevent the war. The whole story of the Mahabharat is full, not just of the war. It's full of all of that which led up to the war. And I won't go into it tonight, but just all of the times that they tried. Even Krishna himself tried to prevent this war. Just like the naturalists amongst us take everything we can, you know, we eat as much lemon and honey and ginger and all, you know, hot beverages and tulsi and all this stuff that we take to fight off those bacteria. We don't go to antibiotics as our first stop. It's only when it doesn't work. And this is what happened. Same thing in the Ramayana. Lord Ram didn't wake up in the morning and say, yeah, you know, there's this Ravan, and I've heard of him, and I'm gonna commit myself to killing him. Even after his wife was abducted, he sends Hanumanji as an emissary. Only when nothing works do they go to war. And these are wars of Dharma against adharma, of righteousness against unrighteousness. And what they knew in both cases was, if they don't fight this war, if the quote-unquote bad guys of both of these stories are not vanquished, they're going to keep killing more people. Like if I don't take the antibiotic, the bacteria is just going to keep growing and growing and growing and eventually take my life. And that's what was happening in both cases. And so they didn't fight the war because violence is a good thing. They didn't fight the war because they forgot that compassion and love and nonviolence are our dharma. They fought the war to restore dharma, where adharma, where unrighteousness had taken over. And tragically, sometimes people have to be killed. Another close to home example would be, you think about it, if you were walking down the street with your mother, with anyone, or even just alone, and suddenly somebody comes and starts attempting to kidnap or to kill or to rape your mom who you're walking with, or just a woman on the road, a young girl on the road. Well, very few of us would keep on walking. We might all start by saying, hey, stop. We might call the police. But if things escalated and our hey, stop didn't work and the police still didn't show up, and the violence was getting worse, or he was on the verge of getting her into his car, we might reach down if we had an umbrella in our hands or a cane in our hand and hit him. And if a light hit didn't work, we might hit him harder. Not because we're violent people, not because we forget that love and compassion are virtues, but because in that moment we are acutely aware of the fact of there being a higher good in this. Of violence being absolutely required as a last resort to restore dharma, to restore righteousness. Very few of us are prepared to sacrifice our mother or a woman on the street or a young girl on the street into the hands of a rapist or a murderer or a kidnapper just because we don't believe in violence. Most of us would muster up whatever it took to use our strength to get this guy to stop. And that's what happened in the war of the Mahabharata and the war of the Ramayana.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM-FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. How do we deal with death? People around us dying. Death is one of those things. Most of the world actually falls into this category, but it's easier to see with death. One of those things over which we have no control. Our only way to deal is through acceptance of it, because there is no option. Your lack of acceptance isn't going to change it. Usually, in our lives, we think that if I just don't accept this, your child comes to you, they want to marry someone you don't approve of. Your loved one comes and tells you they're having an affair. Or you think they're having an affair, you find out. Whatever, things happen in life. You're about to get fired from your job. Things happen in life that we don't want to face. And if I just don't accept this, so I'm not going to let you date this person, you are not allowed to be together with this person. Or with our loved one, having the affair. We think somehow our anger or our silence or our pain or something is going to undo it. And so we live mostly in this myth of our own control, this illusion of our own control. And the truth is we have almost no control over anything that happens in life other than our own lives. We have all the control of our own lives and almost no control of other people's karmic packages. But death is the area where that hits home most clearly. Because in other situations, we seem to think, well, I'll just convince them. I'll go on a hunger strike. I'll cut them off. They won't have any money. Yeah, let them try to get married without any money. I'll threaten suicide. I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll try all of these things to prevent that which is happening from happening. They usually don't work. But we live in this illusion anyway that I can somehow manipulate the situation. But death is one of those things that we realize there's no more bargaining. And so there's so many aspects to the pain of death. One, of course, is the loss of the loved one. But another very important aspect is this loss of a sense of control and faith and understanding the universe. This wasn't supposed to happen. We're usually not quite so torn apart if a loved one at, you know, 95 or 100 or 102 passes away, especially peacefully in their sleep. You know, we feel like, okay, we miss them, we're sad, but we understand the body was done. But the rest of the time, this wasn't supposed to happen. It's not fair. And so the other aspect is, how can I, as you've asked, how can I deal? What can I do? Well, nothing. And that, you know, we say it jokingly, but it's actually a really deep awareness. Nothing you can do. That person has passed on, whether you accept it or not, whether you deal or not, whether you try to manipulate God or not, nothing you can do. And the beauty and the power of that awareness is it brings home so directly the truth that we're all going to die. Not just that person. Not only can't I do anything about that person, but I can't do anything about myself. One day, that's going to be me. You know, when we sit in the Aarti every night, just across the river and slightly downriver is the cremation ground for Rishikesh. And sometimes if you look out and you look downriver, you can see a fire going because in the Hindu tradition, it's very important that they do the cremation before sundown. And so frequently, if someone's died that day, there's this rush to, you know, get the fire started before sundown. So you can look and see a fire burning. And usually in Aarti, I keep my eyes closed. But if I ever see a cremation going on, I always try to keep my eyes open and just focused and meditating on that fire. Because the easiest thing to do is to just ignore it. We're over here celebrating. Death is safely on the other side of the river. But to really realize, yeah, today we're celebrating, they're mourning, someone else is burning. But tomorrow or the next day, or a few years from now, it's going to be us standing over a burning pyre, mourning a loved one. And then tomorrow or the day after, or a few years from now, or a few decades from now, it's going to be us burning. And to hold all of that awareness at the same time, to stay in the Aarti, so it's not that I leave the Aarti mentally. Allow yourself to stay in the Aarti, in the celebration, in the joy, and simultaneously be there at their cremation. Be the mourner and be the one in the pyre. Can you be burned and be celebrating in the same moment, in the same consciousness? Can you hold both of those in your awareness at the same time? And it's not easy, but it's really, really deep if you can get it to happen. And what it makes us realize is, wow, this is all part of the package. The joy, the celebration, the mourning, the burning. The river seems like a very safe barrier. But a few feet above the water, the flames of their cremation fire mingle with the flames from our Aarti in such a way that just a few feet above the water, you can no longer tease apart which was a flame of death and which was a flame of life. And that's the only way to deal with death that I know. It's also, according to the saints and the sages, the only way to deal with life. One of the deepest and corest tenets in the Indian spiritual tradition is that until you can die, not that you should die, but until in your consciousness is fully able to understand and accept, doesn't mean you have to love it, but just knowing that this is part of your package, until you really have that, you can't live. Because otherwise life is running from death. That's the restlessness, that's the anxiety, that's the fear, that's the gotta do this, gotta do this, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And to really look death in the face. But lastly, on a specific note in terms of the mourning of the death of loved ones, hold on to the knowledge that when they were alive, it was their spirit you loved, not their bodies. You may have also loved their bodies, but ultimately it was your spirit, their spirit you loved. If they went and got plastic surgery and looked different, you'd still love them. If they got into a car accident and their face went through the windshield and got all messed up, you'd still love them. If they had to get an arm amputated, you'd still love them. There's no physical part of their body that if they lost that, you would no longer love them. It's not like, well, yeah, okay, you can amputate the arm, but not your left big toe. You know, if you amputated the left big toe, we'd have to talk. There's no physical part of the body that is the storehouse of what you love. What you love is the essence and the spirit. And that's still here. Just as their body changed so many times during their life while you knew them and loved them, now the body has again changed forms. It's gone back to the earth. But the soul hasn't gone anywhere. Soul was never born. Soul doesn't die. That which you loved is still here. And to know that, that connection you had, that love you experienced, that's still here. Because that's in you. And to allow yourself to feel that. Otherwise, we get into the drama of they're gone, they're gone, they're gone. And people encourage that drama. If you say something like, oh, you know, I can still hear them, they still talk to me, people will say, get over it. Eventually, they'll send you to a therapist. But the truth is, you still can hear them. Not with these ears. We understand that what you're hearing is not vibrating your tympanic membrane. But of course you can still hear them because their inner voice is still there. Your inner ears, if they're open and on, you can hear them. But our culture is one that's so focused on just the body that they're going to tell you, you need therapy if you think you can still hear them. You need therapy if you think you can see them. You need therapy if you still feel them with you. You're not letting go. Let go. Well, why? You spent your life loving someone. Why let go? I don't understand. And what to let go of? Their soul that's interlocked with your soul, the love that is still in you, how do you let go of that? Can I give yourself a lovectomy? Lovectomy? I mean, you're going to somehow remove the love from you? You can't. There's nothing to let go of. Other than the concept that who I loved existed only in that physical form, which we know isn't true because they changed physical form so many times before us over the years anyway. That's all we need to let go of. Keep loving them. Of course, keep loving them. Love is beautiful. And what you loved anyway was their soul and spirit. That's still here. Keep loving that. Love the memory of their body. But love the presence of their soul.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. We talk so much about opening the heart on the spiritual journey, and when we've experienced hard times and hard things, how can we still open our heart? Well, there's no spiritual scripture or guru or teacher, master of any level, whoever has made a promise that I've ever heard that says, on a spiritual path, with your heart open, you will never be hurt. There's no such promise. There's nobody who says, if you love, forget a spiritual path, if you love in your life, you will never be hurt. All right, just for a moment here. Has anybody here ever been hurt? Right? There's a great story, actually, of a man who goes to his guru, and his son has died, and the man is as miserable as you can imagine a man would be whose son has just passed away. And he's furious at God, and he's furious at his guru. If I've been a good person, I've been a devotee, how could you hurt me in this way? And he goes to his guru and he says, you're my guru. Bring my son back to life. This is unfair. This is not right. I shouldn't be hurt like this. Bring him back to life. And the guru says, okay. He says, you're right, you are a very good devotee. You shouldn't be hurt in any way that's different than other people have been hurt. Do me a favor. I will bring your son back to life, but I need one thing from you. I need you to bring me a grain of rice, just one grain of rice, from the home of someone who has not lost a loved one. And he says, with that grain of rice, I will bring your son back to life. And so the man, of course, goes out from house to house to house, village to village to village. And of course, he couldn't find any house in which they hadn't lost a loved one. And he comes back finally to his guru. And he says, I'm so sorry. He says, forgive me for demanding that of you. I've now spent the last several days immersed in the pain that everyone has gone through. And I now realize that this is everywhere. And so in our lives, we lose. We get hurt. It's the nature of the universe. It's the nature of nature. Love a tree. If you love it for 9 months, it's going to lose its leaves. You can worship those green leaves as much as you want, but come autumn, it's going to lose those leaves. Love the summertime. You're going to lose it to winter. Love the snow. You're going to lose it to spring. Love your youth. You're going to lose it to old age. Whatever we love, we lose it. It's the nature of life. And so the heart open is our choice. What we have to accept is, okay, so this is what life is. Closing my heart doesn't change it. What closing my heart does is it means I'm in pain every day, rather than just the days that I lose something. Closing my heart means 365 days a year, I hurt. Opening my heart means I'm going to hurt some days. I'm going to hurt when people hurt me or I feel hurt. But closing my heart deprives me of every possibility that I have for joy. Because we don't get joy by just getting up every day and having a shower and getting dressed. We don't get joy from hugging our dollar bills or rupees or our cars or our house. I mean, has anybody actually ever embraced a door of your house or the fender of your car or your wallet? The things we embrace are people, animals, trees. Things that are living, we're going to lose them. They're going to hurt us, knowingly, unknowingly. Maybe they just hurt us by dying. Maybe they hurt us while living. But I guarantee you they're going to hurt you. Or you're going to hurt them. You're going to die first. But our only possibility of life, of any joy, any meaning in our life, is to stay open-hearted. And yeah, it's not easy. But this is where the root of the word courage, I always share this, I love this so much. We tend to think that the words bravery and courage are synonyms, but they're actually not. The root of the word bravery comes from armor, to be armored. So the soldiers who were brave because they had steel plates over their chest. They had steel masks over their head. They had 20-foot spears in their arms. And so they were able to approach a warring army with bravery because they were covered and they had this big long spear between them and the enemy. But the root of courage is heart. It's the same as the root of the French word cœur. And the root of courage is literally an open heart. So it becomes our only choice. It's not a matter of how to. It's a matter of I have to. And then what we do is we just fill our lives with as much love as we possibly can and as much joy and as much meaning as we possibly can, knowing that, yeah, we're going to get hurt. Some of it's going to hurt us. But if I can fill myself with enough of it, where it's not only coming from one direction, then when I get hurt from one direction, one person harms me, I lose one person, the leaves on my tree fall down, at least I've got other sources. And so people, nature, our work, our spiritual practice, the safest thing you can do if you don't want to be hurt, love God. God's not going anywhere. God's not going to betray you, not going to tell your secrets, not going to leave you for someone, not going to insult you. This is where the saints and the sages who lived in caves were so blissful. No family, no friends, no social life. You'd think, my God, they'd be, you know, lonely. But that inner connection can be so strong that even living in a place where they didn't see anybody, just them in the river, them in the deer, them in the snakes, so blissful, so peaceful, so fulfilled. The more we need others in our life, the more chances we take to be hurt. I'm not saying cut yourself off. I'm not saying go live in a cave. But that inner connection is that which inoculates us from the pain of loss, of betrayal, of loneliness. Because we've got something. We've got the best. It's like having your best friend always with you. There's a beautiful line in the prayers we sing every morning that says, "Tu akele nahi pyari, Ram tere satme." It says, my dear, my love, you're not alone. You're never alone. God is always with you. I'll end with this beautiful story. Many of you may have heard it, but it bears repeating, of the man who was so upset, and he said to God, you know, I was such a good devotee and I worshipped you and I prayed to you, but you betrayed me. He said, God, I had this dream last night in which my whole life was spread out before me. And I was walking along the beach of my life. And all along the way, I could see two sets of footprints, my footprints and your footprints. And you were always with me. And he said, but then on this path of my life, as I was watching it in my dream, I noticed that at all these hard times, when I really was broken, I really was shattered, when I needed you so much, there was only one set of footprints. You left me. You left me when I needed you the most. How could you do that? And God said, my dear, that's when I carried you. So that's the connection. Everybody else may hurt you. Everybody else may betray you. But that spiritual connection, doesn't matter what name you use for God, how you worship the divine, but that inner connection, that's what carries you at these times in our life. And that's what gives you the courage to keep your heart open, because you know, God's carrying me. Right? It's like the child in the mother's arms, fearless. Mother puts the kid down, they start to cry. But in the mother's arms, no problem. Bring it on. And that's how it is with your spiritual connection.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. the girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
When I broke my foot,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for taking you to your therapies, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. That's why AARP gives you the information to provide even better care for your loved one. Visit aarp.org/caregiving, brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati, and thanks for coming back and joining us for more of inspiration and transformation. We're planning to devote some time from our life every day to move on our spiritual path. But how do we know that this path actually leads anywhere? How do we know that there's actually a self beyond the physical body? So if I'm gonna dedicate some of my time to something, I want to make sure that there's gonna be some returns. How do we know? Here's the dilemma you face. The mode of knowing, our mode of knowing, our tool of knowing, is the mind. That's just, it's how I know things. It's how I process my information. It's where my brain is. But the mind cannot know about something beyond the mind. And so a question like this puts us in this very interesting position of saying, you need to convince a part of me that by its nature cannot understand that which I want you to convince me of. See, I know that beautiful Winnie is sitting in front of me. How do I know that? Because my eyes can see her. Now, if I were blind, or I had a mask over my eyes, or there were a wall between us, couldn't see her. She'd still be there, but I couldn't see her. Then maybe she'd speak. So with my ears, I would know. The sound of her voice would create sound waves that would vibrate against my eardrum, and it would give a message to my brain. Ah, that's her voice. But if I were deaf, or I had earplugs in, couldn't hear her. Maybe then I'd touch. Sometimes people who are blind, they recognize people by touch. But you see, I require one of my physical senses in order to know she exists. If I had no use of any of my five senses, couldn't see her, couldn't hear her, couldn't smell her, couldn't feel her, couldn't taste her, she'd still be there. But I would have no way of knowing she was there. Now, this brings us to our dilemma. Because you cannot see or hear or smell or taste or feel with your fingertips God realization. Or God, for that matter, most of us, unless we're super blessed to have a particular type of darshan. And since the mind is our tool for knowing, this is where so many people say, well, I don't believe in God. Prove it to me. Show it to me. But when we say prove it to me, what we're saying is prove it to me through the methods that I have available. Well, you could say the same thing about love. Try convincing a young child who comes home from school, and, you know, a young boy in school who says, I'll never fall in love, I'll never get married, girls have the cooties. Right? Now, how are you going to convince this young boy that at 8 years old he thinks girls have the cooties, but really there's going to come a time in his life when he doesn't think girls have the cooties. There's going to come a time in his life where he does fall in love. He certainly may decide not to get married, but he's not going to think girls have the cooties forever. But try to convince him at that age of this thing called love. You can't. All you can do is know and pray that his life should be blessed in such a way as he grows that he also experiences love. Because once you've experienced it, the fact that you can't see it or hear it or smell it or taste it or touch it is irrelevant. Nobody can convince you that love doesn't exist if you've ever been in love. Because we know. And this is where, when we look at our spiritual practice and our spiritual path, we have to use a means of knowing other than the five senses. As long as we relegate our knowing to those five senses, then we limit our entire lives to only those things we can know through these senses. And this is where the practice of meditation becomes so important, is it gets us in touch with what you can call a sixth sense. Another way of knowing. It's not that we only have five senses. Science only talks about five. There's a lot more senses than that. But we have to look inward for another way of knowing. Anybody who has experienced God or the divine or the universe or light or spirit, whatever word we use, it doesn't matter, has that understanding just like anybody who's ever been in love has that understanding. But we have to look in for that way of knowing. And until we have that, this is where our faith comes in. This is where we look around at people who are on a spiritual path, because this is the only way that we know anything. So many times I'll have youngsters come up to me who have just gone off to college, you know, and in Indian families particularly, they grow up so sheltered and so protected and so untempted because there's no environment for temptation. And now they go off to college and their parents have said to them, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. And they'll come to me and they'll say, well, is it really so bad? Why not? What's the problem? What's one taste? What's one time? And what I always tell them is, it's not about one taste or one time. Nobody's ever died from one sip of alcohol, unless you happen to be allergic. Nobody's ever died from trying a cigarette. But the problem becomes, it's never once. And where does it lead us in our life? And this is where what I always say to these youngsters is, it's not about what you do at 19 or 20 or 21. It's about where do you want to go with your life? And don't believe me, don't believe your parents. Look around, find somebody who's 40, who's 45, who's 50. Who's been drinking alcohol their whole lives, who's an alcoholic, somebody who's a smoker, somebody who's a gambler, somebody who's a drug addict, somebody who thinks it would be fun to just live homeless on a beach, and ask yourselves, is that where I want to end up? There's nothing objectively wrong. I'm not the moral police. God hasn't put me in charge of how people live their lives. If people want to be alcoholics and drug addicts, they've absolutely got the right to do that. But we each have to make a choice for our own lives, which is that where I want to go? And if it's not where I want to go, then I can't get on the same train that they're on. And clearly, the train that they're on began at some point with saying, well, what's the problem with just once? What's the problem with just a little bit? And if you know you don't want to end up at that destination, then why get on the train? Sure, you can get off at some point, but why take that risk of jumping off a moving train if you know it's not where I want to go? Why get on? And on the flip side, look around at people who are where you want to go. People who have in their lives what you're looking for. Not just on the superficial level, not people who just have driveways full of Mercedes, but who need pills to fall asleep at night or on antidepressants and, you know, whose lives are miserable. But people who really have something you're looking for, who have the joy, who have the peace, who have the meaning. I mean, I'm not going to tell you what you're looking for. You know what you're looking for. And so you look around at people who have that. And then you say, well, what train did they get on? And until I've had the inner experience with that sixth way of knowing, we use our faith of people who have where I want to go. And say to them, and really, you don't have to trust me. Do a poll. Do your own scientific study. Ask everybody. What do you do? Why are you so peaceful? Why are you so happy? Why do your eyes shine? Why do you have such a beautiful vibration that I just always want to be near you? Ask them what they do. And my guess is what you're going to hear is a lot of talk about spirituality. And it may be people of different religions, their spiritual path may certainly entail a lot of different things. But in my life, I know, on a personal level, the only people who have something that I would say, oh, that's where I want to go. That was what made me make the decision to be here in the first place. Was I looked around, I was 25, I looked around at the people, and I thought, I don't want to be where they are when I'm 45 or 50. And then I looked at Pooja Swamiji. And I thought, well, all right, I'm probably not going to get there in this life, but at least that's the train I want to be on. That's going the way I need to go. Where it's going to take me, who knows? But at least that's the right train to get on. And so that's how we make these decisions. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.